Chapter 4. Where Have All the Criminals Gone? In 1966, 1 year after Nicolae Ceaușescu became the communist dictator of Romania, he made abortion illegal. "The fetus is the property of the entire society," he proclaimed. "Anyone who avoids having children is a deserter who abandons the laws of national continuity." Such grandiose declarations were commonplace during Ceaușescu's reign, for his master plan, to create a nation worthy of the new socialist man, was an exercise in grandiosity. He built palaces for himself while alternately brutalizing and neglecting his citizens. Abandoning agriculture in favor of manufacturing, he forced many of the nation's rural dwellers into unheated apartment buildings. He gave government positions to 40 family members, including his wife, Elena, who required 40 homes and a commensurate supply of fur and jewels. Madame Ceaușescu, known officially as the best mother Romania could have, was not, in fact, particularly maternal. "The worms never get satisfied, regardless of how much food you give them," she said when Romanians complained about the food shortages brought on by her husband's mismanagement. She had her own children bugged to ensure their loyalty. Ceaușescu's ban on abortion was designed to achieve one of his major aims, to rapidly strengthen Romania by boosting its population. Until 1966, Romania had had one of the most liberal abortion policies in the world. Abortion was in fact the main form of birth control, with 4 abortions for every single live birth. Now, virtually overnight, abortion was forbidden. The only exemptions were mothers who already had 4 children or women with significant standing in the Communist Party. At the same time, all contraception and sex education were banned. Government agents, sardonically known as the menstrual police, regularly rounded up women in their workplaces to administer pregnancy tests. If a woman repeatedly failed to conceive, she was forced to pay a steep celibacy tax. Ceaușescu's incentives produced the desired effect. Within 1 year of the abortion ban, the Romanian birth rate had doubled. These babies were born into a country where, unless you belong to the Ceaușescu clan or the communist elite, life was miserable. But these children would turn out to have particularly miserable lives. Compared to Romanian children born just 1 year earlier, the cohort of children born after the abortion ban would do worse in every measurable way. They would test lower in school, they would have less success in the labor market, and they would also prove much more likely to become criminals. The abortion ban stayed in effect until Ceaușescu finally lost his grip on Romania. On December 16th, 1989, thousands of people took to the streets of Timișoara to protest his corrosive regime. Many of the protesters were teenagers and college students. The police killed dozens of them. One of the opposition leaders, a 41-year-old professor, later said that it was his 13-year-old daughter who insisted he attend the protest, despite his fear. "What is most interesting," he said, "is that we learned not to be afraid from our children. Most were aged 13 to 20. A few days after the massacre in Timișoara, Ceaușescu gave a speech in Bucharest before 100,000 people. Again, the young people were out in force. They shouted down Ceaușescu with cries of "Timișoara" and "Down with the murderers." His time had come. He and Elena tried to escape the country with $1 billion, but they were captured, given a crude trial, and, on Christmas Day, executed by firing squad. Of all the communist leaders deposed in the years bracketing the collapse of the Soviet Union, only Nicolae Ceaușescu met a violent death. It should not be overlooked that his demise was precipitated in large measure by the youth of Romania, a great number of whom, were it not for his abortion ban, would never have been born at all. The story of abortion in Romania might seem an odd way to begin telling the story of American crime in the 1990s, but it's not. In one important way, the Romanian abortion story is a reverse image of the American crime story. The point of overlap was on that Christmas Day of 1989, when Nicolae Ceaușescu learned the hard way, with a bullet to the head, that his abortion ban had much deeper implications than he knew. On that day, crime was just about at its peak in the United States. In the previous 15 years, violent crime had risen 80%. It was crime that led the nightly news and the national conversation. When the crime rate began falling in the early 1990s, it did so with such speed and suddenness that it surprised everyone. It took some experts many years to even recognize that crime was falling, so confident had they been of its continuing rise. Long after crime had peaked, in fact, some of them continued to predict ever darker scenarios. But the evidence was irrefutable. The long and brutal spike in crime was moving in the opposite direction, and it wouldn't stop until the crime rate had fallen back to the levels of 40 years earlier. Now the experts hustled to explain their faulty forecasting. The criminologist James Allen Fox explained that his warning of a bloodbath was in fact an intentional overstatement. "I never said there would be blood flowing in the streets," he said, "but I used strong terms like bloodbath to get people's attention, and it did. I don't apologize for using alarmist terms." If Fox seems to be offering a distinction without a difference, bloodbath versus blood flowing in the streets, we should remember that even in retreat mode, experts can be self-serving. After the relief had settled in, after people remembered how to go about their lives without the pressing fear of crime, there arose a natural question. Just where did all those criminals go? At one level, the answer seemed puzzling. After all, if none of the criminologists, police officials, economists, politicians, or others who traffic in such matters had foreseen the crime decline, how could they suddenly identify its causes? But this diverse army of experts now marched out a phalanx of hypotheses to explain the drop in crime. A great many newspaper articles would be written on the subject. Their conclusions often hinged on which expert had most recently spoken to which reporter. Here, ranked by frequency of mention, are the crime drop explanations cited in articles published from 1991 to 2001 in the 10 largest circulation papers in the LexisNexis database. Crime drop explanation number 1, innovative policing strategies. Number of citations, 52. Explanation number 2, increased reliance on prisons, 47 citations. Number 3, changes in crack and other drug markets, 33 citations. Number 4, aging of the population, 32 citations. Number 5, tougher gun control laws, 32 citations. Number 6, a strong economy, 28 citations. Number 7, increased number of police, 26 citations. And number 8, all other explanations, including increased use of capital punishment, concealed weapons laws, gun buybacks, and others, 34 citations.